Ladies and gentlemen, I present to you the one and only Marshall Andy.
My darling, kiss me. Fly me to the moon. Let me play among the stars. Let me see what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars. In other words, hold my hand. In other words, my darling, kiss me. Fill my heart with song and let me sing forevermore. You are all I long for, all I worship and adore.
That's Marshall Andy on the vocal from his CD, The Best of Everything. What do you mean by The Best of Everything?
Well, I went back some time back and decided, of course, I've done 8 or 10 CDs over the years. This one, that song you just heard, was just done a couple of months ago, and I'm proud that I could still hit those notes. But I wanted the guy, I got so many people who said, well, I want this one, and I want this one, talking about CDs, I want this one. And I got to thinking, I've seen people do the best of, say, Marshall Andy, but I didn't really know which ones to put on there, so I put six new songs on there. And then I thought, instead of just doing what I'm doing now mostly, not a whole lot of country, but a lot of Western and a lot of country songs on the radio show, and I thought, well, what I would do with that was call it The Best of Everything and go through and get five genres of music that represent my background, because I've done all of those at one time or other. And so that's what I tried to do. And I thought I would just call it The Best of Everything.
And most people are going to know you as Marshall Andy the Cowboy that
right.
has the TV show on PBS, and they're going to know you as more of a Western guy.
Yeah.
But let's... Let's rewind it to when you first started singing. You probably weren't even singing Western music when you started, were you?
Not at all. As a matter of fact, let me tell you how that came about, Todd. I came from a small hometown in South Carolina, Georgetown, just on the coast. My dad was a fisherman and a farmer. And we were right near Myrtle Beach, between Myrtle Beach and Charleston. That's where Georgetown is. That's where I'm from. Georgetown and Pawleys Island. That's where I grew up. Well, anyway, I wanted to sing. I sang a little, and we called it Glee Club, and of course, in high school. And then we didn't have a country band at home. There was one in Charleston, 60 miles away, but I couldn't do anything with that. So when I was about 16 or 17 in high school, I got the urge. Frank Sinatra was so big at that time. Billy Eckstein was big. Sarah Vaughan was big. All these are pop singers and everything. And, of course, Bing was real big. And then Jimmy and Tommy Dorsey came along, and they introduced the Everly Brothers. Not the Everly, but the Eberly Brothers, Bob and his brother Ray, two vocalists. And I was just into that. And I thought, boy, I'd like to try that. Well, we didn't have a Western band there either. I love the Sons of the Pioneers, Roy Rogers' group. He started them. Right. And, of course, Gene Autry's first movie was with the Sons of Pioneers. But the thing that got me, there wasn't any of those bands around. And all of a sudden, World War II is over. It's now 1946. It was over with in 45, 46. The boys coming back from the service who were in special assignments as musicians playing for big bands, your pop music of the day in World War II, they were all the Dorseys and Glenn Miller and that kind of work. And they had formed a band, and each one of them worked for some different group, but they got together there in my hometown, and I begged them to let me sing with them. And I kept doing that for a couple of years. When I was 18, Jack Blunt, who happens to be a director, not well, director as you can be for that long time, Senator William Blunt here in East Tennessee. But anyway, Jack said, well, I'll tell you what I'll do. He said, you're driving me crazy. He said, why don't you do this? He said, you're not ready right now. I've never even heard you. He said, why don't you do this? I've got a small job coming up pretty soon at the Moose Club. Real, real small job. And get you a song, get the key, get the timing, get it right. And I said, well, I don't even know what song to pick. He said, I'm going to give you a song, and I'm going to figure out what key you're in. And it was Blue Moon, which is a standard pop song that just about every pop singer sang it. And I said, well, I'll take Blue Moon, and got my key, E-flat, and got the timing. He told me, anybody plays this for you, now ask him for a four-bar intro. I didn't even know what he was talking about. But anyway, I did that, and I went over there that afternoon before they started. They came and set up, the band equipment and all that. And he said, come by early, and we'll go over it and see if you know this song. So he gave me the words to the song, and he had a old scratchy 78 record. And I spent the rest of that week learning it. So I came over there that afternoon on Saturday, and he said, let me hear you sing it. And I did it, and he said, I'm going to bring you on tonight. So he brought me on that night, and I worked with him all the way at summers when I got out of college and came home. I worked every summer with him, and all special dances, New Year's, Christmas, that kind of thing. So I started out as a big band singer.
Do you remember the first time you got paid for singing?
That was that night, and it was $5.
What did it feel like when they handed you that $5 to do something you probably would have done for free?
Well, I would have been glad to do it for free. As a matter of fact, they wouldn't even have to pay me the whole next year if they didn't want to. But no, I was tickled to death. $5 in 1946 was like almost like a $50 bill now somebody just handed you. Because I remember we spent like that for groceries at our home, $5 and $6. That's all they spent for groceries for a week. And I thought, golly, man, this is unbelievable. So I got that feeling that I'm sure it's in your mind right now when you ask the question, because you remember your first time,
that's
I'm
right.
sure. And I thought I was on the top of the world on cloud nine. And I said, can I sing again? He said, yes. He said, we're doing 2 weeks here. But he said, after that, I'm going to book you with our regular band. And the next job was at the Pavilion at Pawleys Island, and then we went from there to the Ocean Forest Hotel at Myrtle Beach, and and then we worked our way down to Charleston and all around that area around Georgetown down there, Lowcountry.
If you just joined us, this is Flipside. I'm talking to Marshall Andy. So in all of these touring around the South Carolina days, you were what, about 18?
18 and 19.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
But I also was offered a scholarship to play football at Clemson University. It was called Clemson College at the time, and I took that, and that took me out of the band there. But I found a band at Clemson called the Jungleers, because we were the Tigers, you know, the Jungleers band, and I sang with them for special. But let me tell you what really happened that really thrilled me to death. They elected me at school at Clemson to the CDA, the Central Dance Association. We decided what band would come to town to play for the next big dance. So I had a chance to do that. So the first one that came in there, Erskine Hawkins was the first one to come in, and a big trumpet man. And then Charlie Spivak came in right after him. And then Erskine Hawkins, excuse me, was piano. Charlie was a trumpet. He played lead trumpet for Glenn Miller in his earlier days. And they let me sing with those bands. And somehow or other, I had learned to do the cattle call like Eddie Arnold does, which yeah. I still do today. They would ask me at the break at, like, say, the halftime at a ball game, but it had an intermission there. And what they would end up doing was they would say, well, now, Andy, can you do an imitation of anybody else? And I could do Billy Eckstein, and I could do Nat King Cole. And I'd go out there to keep the kids from going out to get the bottles out of the car, you know. And I would put on another show just by myself doing imitations. And I did that, I guess, my sophomore and junior and senior years when I was there. But I worked. And then when we got out, of course, I got transferred all over the country as working, as Catherine and the children could attest to. I always managed to find a band I could sing with everywhere I went. And when I came to Tennessee, I wanted to do what I started out wanting to do, and that was do Western cowboy music. And we formed a band here called Riders of the Silver Screen Band, much like the Sons of the Pioneers harmony sound. And we had that together until they all died out on me. There's only one left besides me, and he's on my TV show on Saturday mornings, Fred Longmire.
Well, let's have a little bit of the cowboy style of Marshall Andy. This is Ride the Range Once More, Marshall Andy Smalls.
Hide your love, all of you. Hide your love, all of you. I want to ride the range once more. I want to see the western sky. I want to go into town on a Saturday. I want to watch my money fly. I want to ride the range once more. I want to hear the doggies call. I want to sleep in a bunk and eat some sourdough bread. I want to sing a cattle call. Want to ride the range once more. I want to eat some prairie stew. I want to sit in the saddle till the early morn. I want to ride the range with you. I want to ride the range once more. I want to hear the doggies bawl. I want to sleep in a bunk and eat some sourdough bread. I want to sing the cattle call. I want to ride the range once more. I want to eat some prairie stew. I want to rope the cattle till the setting sun. I want to ride the range with you.
From his CD, The Best of Everything, and he means that, Marshall Andy with Ride the Range Once More. We were talking about his musicians and how a lot of them, well, they just kind of disappeared on him.
They started dying one by one. They got to where I couldn't even hire a guitar player. They thought they were going to die next.
Yeah, I'd be a little nervous. Now, when you were at Clemson, what position did you play on the football team?
I was an outside linebacker. And I was very fortunate. I went when we had some good football teams, Orange and Gator Bowl teams both, and there were only five bowl games at the time I went to college. So if you went to a bowl game, it meant something.
Did people on the team know that you were a singer?
Well, when we went to parties and things, I always sang. But I had to be careful because Coach Howard did not like singers, my coach. The head coach, meanest man that ever lived.
He didn't like singers?
Oh, no. He didn't.
Why
want,
not?
Well, he wanted you to be a football player. He didn't want no singer out there. Now, we'll forget, one time, Todd, they had, I believe it was every year they would bring the freshmen in for like a freshman welcome party. Well, they asked me to go sing for that party, which I did. And I'm a sophomore by this time, see. I'm out of the freshman class. And every once in a while, Coach Howard would go to that party because he had some football players that he wanted to welcome, you know, to be a part of the unit body there in college. So he was there one night after I had got up and done three or four or five songs. Next day at practice, I pulled out and went the wrong way, or I messed up an assignment. He said, "Okay, boys, let's all come in here." Said, "We got us." He blew his whistle loud. Said, "Come on in here." Said, "We got us a Caruso. We want to hear him sing." And I said, "Oh, my Lord." Anyway, I said, "Coach, I can't sing in that." He said, "Okay, then, Caruso, start running." He ran me around there, and it got dark. And I thought, well, at least I could go in now. And just as I started to go in back up the hill to the campus gym, he turned the lights on and said, "Keep running, boy." And, boy, I never let him. I checked every audience that I ever was at Clemson. Before I went out, I made sure he wasn't in the house. Boy, he did not like it. He was a tough guy. Comedian, though. He ended up being, he was one of the funniest guys that ever lived. And they contacted me about maybe 6, 7, 8 years ago in college, because I could talk like him, just like him. And they said, "We're getting ready to do a CD on Coach Frank Howard and some of his funny stories. Would you do do that voice and tell those stories?" And I did. And they were selling them over there, thousands of them, up until 2 years ago. And it finally, it burned out finally. But yeah, oh, he was awful. Tough.
You have a gift for mimicking people.
Well, I used to be better than I am now. But here, to give you a little, got enough time for another little story about Howard?
Yeah.
Well, Coach Howard, we went down to Florida, and we had just beaten Villanova at Clemson, and we opened up with Presbyterian College, which was a cupcake, you know. We beat them 55 or something every year.
Now that team could go to a bowl game if they won 5 games.
Isn't that something? That same team. They'll probably show up this year. And I said, "Well, I tell you, it's the kind of thing that we played Florida, and Doug Dickey was a quarterback. I was playing against him at that time, and they had a big fullback named Rick Casares. He was slated to be an All-American, and really big. And we had this trash talker, the guy that played with me at Clemson. We called him Black Cat. He looked just like a big black cat. Black Cat Barton. He ended up being doctor, PhD over at college over there. But anyway, he and I were the same age and real close. And he started trash talking. And he called him a Greek. He says, when Doug came up to the line of scrimmage, he says, "I want him. Send him over me. I want him. I want the big Greek. Said, I got to have him. Give him to me." Well, they knocked him out. I'm right behind him as linebacker. They knocked him like he was on roller skates, went all the way to the sideline. He had to buy a ticket to get back in the ball game. And here he comes right over me. I still got the print of his foot in my chest today, Rick Casares. And they said, and I can hear that PA system announcer to this day saying, "Florida, 1st and 10, tackle made by Smalls." And that went on and went on, and they scored. Well, finally, they kicked back off to us. And when they did, the second play from scrimmage, Billy Hare, another All-American prospect, fumbled the ball. They covered it. Same thing again. I got to have the Greek. I want him. Give him to me. Give him to me. I told Doug Dickey this story, and he said, you know, that guy's telling the truth. That's exactly what he was doing. And, you know, he thought it, a lot of people think he's just trying to be funny, you know, make up these stories. But he just did that, and they scored again. Well, I had this boy on the sideline named Bobby Jolly, and he couldn't wait for me to get hurt because he was wanting to come in the ball game. So, you know, if you mess up that bad, they're going to bring somebody in your place. So they pulled me out after that second touchdown, ran right over me, and I sat on the bench. I didn't even go by Howard. I just sat down on the bench. And five touchdowns later, them, not us, he called me back. Smalls, come on back up here, boy. And I went back over. Then I said, Coach, you want me to go back in there? I didn't want to go back in. I mean, we were getting beat that bad. I was kind of sitting down enjoying the game on the sideline, saying I didn't want to go back in there. Anyway, I go back in there. And I talked to him some more, and he says, I said, Coach, you sure you want me back in there?
He said, heck yeah, I want you back in there. I said, that doggone Jolly said, he's waving them on through. Said, he ain't touched nobody. He said, at least you was getting in the way and slowing them up. Said, he's waving them on through. He said, when he gets out of college, I'm going to recommend him to be a policeman. He can direct traffic, I can tell you that.
Now, what year did you move to Knoxville, and what was it like when you got here?
It was lovely. We came here in April, right in the middle of dogwood season, and we moved here from New York City. Well, not the city. I worked in New York City. I was working for Ted Turner and his father prior to that, but for Ted. We came here in 68, and when we got in here, we just saw everything. It was the middle of April, and everything was in bloom. When we found us a little place to rent out in South Knoxville, and I said, Catherine, this has got to be the first place I've ever been. We had already been transferred some 8 or 9 times prior to that. Yeah, yeah, we bought 13 houses in our lifetime. And anyway, every time there was a new acquisition, they sent me. I was the guy to go in and kind of, you know, welcome, you know, we're in town now. We're going to do better than whoever had this thing before, you know. Anyway, we were in the billboard business then. That's before cable, before Ted was in the cable business. We were in the billboard business. So he sent me here. And I'd been in New York for about just under a year. He said, I just happened to talk to our manager, and of course it wasn't Ted. Ted had a general manager that looked after all this. I said, man, I got to get out of here. This is killing me. I'm used to driving a car right up to where we go and all this transportation and all that just to get to work. I'd take a train from Port Chester Rye up by Connecticut and come straight down into the 42nd Street there, Grand Central Station, and then walk a half block to the office. But, you know, most of the time in the winter, the train didn't run. It was snowed up or frozen or not. It was always late. It was always trouble. And I just said, man, I need to get out of here. If I could have worked near where I was living, I liked that part of the country. The children, they were going to school and adjusting that, and everything was going good. So then Ted got involved. He said, I understand you want to move. And I said, yeah. He said, well, I've got two openings. I've got Birmingham, Alabama, and I've got Knoxville, Tennessee. We just acquired that, and I want you to be the general manager. And I said, golly, I came home excited and got a map, brought me home an atlas map, laid it out on the kitchen table, showed it to Catherine. I said, Catherine, do you realize? Now, if we go to Knoxville, it looks to me like these two interstates are going to connect. That's before the interstates were finished. They just started them good. I said, you could catch 26, get on that and go over to Asheville. I mean, 40 and go over to Asheville and then hit 26 and go all the way to Charleston, to the coast. And I said, that would be the place. And we started looking at Birmingham, and I thought, well, you know, Birmingham's out of the way. You know, Birmingham ain't even close to Alabama. It's it's a ways from everything. So we came here based on that kind of logic. To get back to your original question, we loved it, and all of a sudden, you won't believe this, Ted Turner, this is after a while, decides to sell. He had a chance to sell three of his plants, but they wouldn't buy them unless they could buy the Knoxville one. That was a part of the deal. So he sold it. Well, he called me on the phone and said, well, you shouldn't have a problem with this. You wanted to come back to Atlanta anyway, didn't you? And that's where I'd gone to New York from. And I said, well, no, that's before I moved to Knoxville. So I tried to find a job here, making, you know, with children and all. I had to be careful and get a good job. And I thought, well, And I hadn't found any place to sing yet at that time. You know, I said, well, I guess I can't find a job. We just moved. So we bought and sold again. And we bought a house. We thought we were going to be here for a long time, if not forever, out in Arrowhead, out in South Knoxville. And then we decided that when Ted told us, you know, we had to do one thing or the other, I couldn't find a job. Well, I get down to Atlanta and go through buying and selling all this again. We set up back there, got the children in another school. Everything going good. Drew's playing football by that time, my oldest son. And I started thinking about this, and I thought, well, boy, I sure do miss Knoxville. I get a telephone call from Charles Tombers Advertising. Charlie, this is Charlie Sr., Charlie Jr.'s father. He said, how would you like to come back to Knoxville? I said, man, I would have never left there if I could have found a job. He said, well, he said, you've got one. We've just found and bought, we bought a piece of land down here in Sweetwater, Tennessee. It's got a cave on it, and we did some exploration in there, and we drilled a hole through the wall, and we found we've got a body of water there, and we're going to open it up as a tourist attraction and call it the Lost Sea, and I want you to handle that for me. And I had done advertising commercials for him, voiceovers, the whole time I was here with Ted, you know, for other people, for his agency. And Charlie Jr. had just gotten out of the service at that time, and he was back in the business then. And, boy, they've really done great lately. They're spread out everywhere now, down in Charleston and Charlotte and everywhere. And they just bought a new place downtown here in Knoxville. You won't believe this. After all that, I get that job offer, and I packed right back up and came right back. And I came back and stayed with Charlie, and here's where the Marshall Andy came in.
Well, I hate to do this to you listeners, but we're going to have a part two here and find out how Andy Smalls turns into Marshall Andy. It's really an amazing story of how he becomes Marshall Andy, and all the twists and turns in his life, they're all captured, by the way, in his new book. It's called The Knoxville Cowboy by Marshall Andy Smalls of Marshall Andy and Riders of the Silver Screen. So we'll check back in with Marshall Andy in December. But in the meantime, I don't want to leave you empty-handed, partners. Here is one more from his CD, The Best of Everything, one of my all-time favorite pieces of music, San Antone Rose. Have a great evening, everybody, and thanks to Marshall Andy for coming down here and spending a little time with us.
Deep within my heart lies a melody, a song of old silent tone, where in dreams I live with a memory beneath the stars all alone. It was there I found, beside the Alamo, enchantment strange as the blue up above, a moonlit path that only she would know. Still hears my broken song of love. Moon in all your splendor, oh, only my heart, call back my rose, rose of sand. Lips so sweet and tender, like petals falling apart. Speak once again of my love, my own broken songs. Empty words I know still live in my heart all alone. Off that moonlit path by the Alamo and rose of my rose of San Antone. So sweet and tender, like petals falling apart. Speak once again of my love, my own broken songs. Empty words I know still live in my heart all alone. Of that moonlit path by the Alamo, my rose of San Antone.
my Rosemary Rose of San Antonio.